continuing with the Mimer, the Balatanya of Anila Dodi Vidodi Li. We just started the third parak. We'll start from the beginning again. We're on page Yud Ches. Hine yesh ba'odom b'chinas ir moshav. Now, the Rebbe is going to elaborate on the analogy of the king who goes out into the fields. So there's a person that is referred to as an aspect of an ir moshav, an inhabited city. And then there's a person who bechinas sada umidbor. Then there's the aspect of a field, and then there's the aspect of a desert. There's three levels of existence. A person can be compared to a city that's inhabited, a field, and the most desolate is a desert. Midbar, when we talk about a desert, he eretz lo zarua. It's a land that's not planted. Shehem ha-masim v'hadiburim v'machshavos ashalo la-shem hema. Those are actions, speech, and thoughts that are not directed to Hashem. Ein tzarech lomar, and of course it goes without saying, it's not referring, it's for sure referring to impagam b'machshava dibur ma'aseh. If you blemished your thoughts, speech, and action. But not, you don't have to go that far to be considered a desert. Elafilu gam inyone heter, even aspects of permissibility. Rak shehem inyonim she'enim tzrichim lavodas Hashem. But they are things that you're doing that have no necessity for service of Hashem. Utvorm betelim. And they're items of nothingness. Hare lav urcha de malka lishtoi b'milid hejot. It's not the way the king to be involved in things of a mundane nature. Vizel, and that's the pasuk, says, asher lo yoshav odom shom. That's what it says in Yirmiyoh, about a desert. It's a desert place where people don't live. What does that mean? Of course people don't live in a desert, but in the analogy it makes more sense. Perush, Adam hu, Kamosha Kazan. Talk about an Adam, a person, it's like, it's referring to, for example, Val Dmus Hakisei, Dmus Kamari Adam Vachulo. When we're referring to the holy visions of what, you know, the prophets were entitled to see, certain visions of the Shekhinah, so they show that on the throne of glory, they're sitting on the throne of glory, an image of a human being, an Adam, which is reflecting the godly aspect that a human being has. So a godly person's called an Adam. In a desert, a godly person doesn't live. Lo yoshav sham, he doesn't live there. Why? Ki va'asu li mikdash v'shechanti b'socham. When you make for me a mikdash, a sanctuary, then v'shachanti b'socham, then I will dwell inside of the Jew. So that's where you find the godly person. The godly person doesn't live in a desert that's not connected to Hashem. So this is all explaining the mashal, and the Chassidus Mevorot will explain this further. So let's look below in the right-hand column. Looking in the brackets that are italicized. La'acharei shabir tochan inyan haris yigimul midas harachamim b'chlal b'vodas adam. After the Rebbe in the last chapter explained the concept of the 13 attributes of mercy in general, insofar as a person's service to Hashem. Yamshich levar b'perek zeh es hachidush hamiyuchad b'haris yigimul midas harachamim b'dechadish el. The Rebbe goes into this chapter and gives us the unique insight of an aspect of the 13 attributes of mercy that comes in the month of El. What's unique about Elul's aspect of the 13 midos, which is shukein kabolas pnei melch besada, which is analogous to greeting the king when he is in the field. This is what the whole point of this chapter is about. So then he explains on the idea of the different levels of a person. So just skipping the bold and going right to the text. He says, Inyan ha-mashal, the melech be'ir, u-melech be'sada, the whole analogy of the king in the city and the king in the field, Meir al-shnei matzovim b'avodas adam l'kono. It's referring to two different situations in relation to a person's service to his creator. The first analogy is Ir. What are we talking about? We're talking about a Ir, a city, an inhabited place. Himakom Moshe v'dir sminam. It's where people live. Ubenimshon, that's analogous to what? Hainu kisha adam hu b'matzav sheha'or ha'aloki shochem bo b'goli u'b'yishyashus. It's analogous to the person who's in a situation where the godly light, which means that spark of the in the godly soul, when that light dwells in a revealed state and is sitting well within the person, ubechlalos, and in general, zelkish adam osek b'dinei kedusha, can very well happen when a person is involved in holy activities. Lima Torah, v'kimah mitzvahs, v'vodas tefillah, when you're learning, doing mitzvahs, davening, if you're focused, you can be doing these things and you won't feel anything as well. But the analogy of the person living in the city, meaning he's living in an inhabited area, and the God's presence is revealed within the person. That's the analogy of a person in the city. Mashenkin, on the other hand, sada field, Meiral Mamed Umatzer Shochol. It's teaching about a situation of the mundane. Shein Alokus Begili, where godliness is not in a revealed state. Ubi Siyasusham is not dwelling there. Ubi Frat Ima Adam Huba Madrega Shomidbar. And especially if the person's the lowest level of a desert. Eretz Lo Zerua, a land that's not planted. Next column, Hamoira, which teaches us Alamasim Vadibur Machshav Shelola Hashem Hema. That's reflecting action, speech, and thoughts that are not connected to Hashem at all. Shein Sham Shum Zriyot Smicha Shelola Kedusha. There's no planting and growth of the holy light. That's what we're talking about. That holy light that comes into a person, that's got to be cultivated. There's no cultivation, nothing going on. So just like a relationship has to be cultivated, so if you cultivate that relationship with Hashem, then there's something there. And the godly presence feels comfortable to dwell within you. And that's what a city's all about. People feel comfortable living in a city. You feel settled. And you can go about your life in a very revealed way. That's what it's telling us about the godly spirit within us. So let's look at footnote 25 and footnote 26. So below the line at the bottom on the right hand side, Miloshen HaMaimer Khan, from the wording of the essay over here, when he says the words Ubechinas Sada Umidbar and the aspect of a field and a desert, he puts them together. He uses the wording of the field and the desert. V'chei Miloshen Admer Hazaken, and also from the other Rebbe. The wording he uses, Vinikra Sada Umidbar. He's called a field and a desert, they're put together. Like a king who travels through the ways of the desert. Mashra implies, you'd think, Shesada Umidbar Hainuach. It's the same thing, because he seems to put the two together. He puts a city on one side and a desert in a field. You'd think they're the same. Go to the next paragraph. Awamikitsura Tzemach Tzedek. But if you look at the abridged version of the Tzemach Tzedek, his grandson, in his compilation of Torah thoughts over here, look, skip a line, Muchach Lehedi, it appears clearly, Shemafar, Shtivri Admar, Hazokin, Kamper, Pratius, Yosher, he explains the mimer of the Rebbe a little more detailed. All the Lubavitch Rebbe's would use this mimer, and they give their own little insights into what this mimer was saying. He's saying, the Soto Midbar, Hein Shnei Madrigos, field and desert are two different levels. And desert is a lower level than that of a field. Go to the next next line. Two lines from the bottom. Indian Sutta. So what does a field mean? Eitzel Adam Bapasas, regarding a person in a simple way. What does it mean to be called a field? A field would be analogous to mundane aspects, but they're still done for the sake of heaven. Still done for the sake of heaven. And therefore, they become a preparation for Avodas Hashem and Torah Mitzvahs. And Alderach, as it says, going next column, Sada Hamaisim Vadibur Machshavish Asher Lo Lashem Hema.
No. But
what?
You continue under the line.
Oi, I'm sorry, thank you. I know it wasn't making sense.
Yeah.
Thank you. Al derech sada kipshuta, like what a field means simply. That from a field comes food to sustain the city. A field's a good place. A field's a place you plant. And that sustains. So therefore, really, the analogy of the field is a good thing. Field is the mundane that is directed to Hashem. Skipping the brackets to the next bracket, Masha Enke Midbar, on the other hand, a desert. Those actions that are not for Hashem. So it comes out like this. There's three levels. You've got the city. City's analogous to a person who is doing his avodas Hashem in the most focused way. Learning, davening, thinking of Hashem, loving Hashem. The real deal. And then you've got the area in between, which is the field, where you're going to work. You're eating breakfast, you're doing mundane things, neutral things, but you're doing them l'shem shemaim, and you're doing it only for the purpose to get you to the city. So that's also fine. That sustains you till you can get to the city. That's fine. The desert is where you're doing mundane things that are totally not connected to Hashem at all, or even worse, you're doing negative things that are bad things. That's really what we saw in last week's parsha, Kitetze b'Milchama. Again, you know, of course, everyone is beginning. If the more we're learning, we're finding that Rashi was a chassid. Of course, there's no question about it. But he hid it very well. He was a chassid before there was chassidus. You see these Rashi's, and with the understanding of chassidus, you understand what he was meaning. It says Kitetze b'Milchama. What's the first Rashi say? B'Milchamas Rishus HaPosuk Medaber. The Torah is speaking about a Milchemes Rishus. There were different wars, Jewish wars that were fought. Milchemes Mitzvah, Milchemes Rishus. There were wars that were mitzvah wars, and there were wars that were optional wars. A war that was a mitzvah war was when we went into Israel, we had to kill out the seven Canaanites. Those, we didn't have an option. We had to fight those wars. We had to drive out the Canaanites. Those were not optional. We had to fight those wars. Other wars, if the Jews needed to expand their borders, then they had an option. If they wanted to, they can attack other nations, but they were not required to attack other nations. In the times of David HaMelech, they didn't have enough resources, whatever. They could expand, attack Syria, things like that. It's a Milchemes Rishus, and it's different halachas. Milchemes Mitzvah, you take no captives, you take no prisoners. A Milchemes Rishus, you can. So, of course, you understand, as we've explained many times, that when it says Kitetz Milchama, it's referring to the war against the Yetzirah, right? It's war against the Yetzirah. So now, what's the war we're specifically talking about? We're talking about the war against the Yetzirah, Milchamas Rishus, in the aspects of your life that is Rishus, that is the neutral area of life. That's where you start your battles with the Yetzirah. You don't start your battles in the Yetzirah in Milchamas Mitzvah, because then you're in bad shape. If you're fighting wars dealing with mitzvahs, if you have to fight the Yetzirah to get up in the morning to daven, that's a Milchemes Mitzvah. If you're fighting a war to be able to do a mitzvah, that's bad, because now you're fighting on your godly turf. And if you lose those wars, then you're not doing mitzvahs. The place to start the war is where? Further down. In the Milchemes Rishus, in the aspect of Rishus, when you're eating breakfast, when you're going to work, that's when you have to fight the battles too, and that's the best place to fight the battles. In that neutral area is the area that can easily go. It's like those trenches in no man's land. It can go either way. I'm having Milchemes Rishus. That very activity I do can be an Aveira or can be a mitzvah, depending on what my focus is. And that's what the Torah is saying. Start off by fighting the Milchemes Rishus, and that's where the biggest battles have to be won. It's not, if you can win those battles, then of course it's going to be a lot easier to win the battles of mitzvah. So that's the same thing over here. When we're talking about the Soda, it's the person who's fighting the battles, and he's using the mundane in a way to connect to Hashem. So those are the three levels that he's explaining over here. And there's another footnote, 26. We're talking about the desert is a not planted area, but Oimik Yoser, in deeper understanding, Eretz lo zeruah. What does it mean? A land that's not planted. Hainu eretz shezeruah sham b'chinas lo. Wow. It's a land that you're planting aspects of negativity. When you read the Hebrew words, eretz lo zeruah, a land lo that's not zeruah planted. That's one simple meaning. The deeper meaning is an eretz, a land that lo, negativity, is what is zeruah, which is planted. It's a place where you're planting negativity. In yonim shlilim, negative aspects, hepach kedusha, the opposite of kedusha. Same way, the desert's a bad place. So now, which he goes on now, let's go back upstairs in the middle section, on the left-hand column, third line, where the bold lines, the Baal Tanya says, and of course, we're not speaking where you're doing bad things, bad thoughts, bad actions, but even mundane things that are not directed to Hashem. So look in the non-bold print. V'halo l'Hashem heima, those words, things that are not directed to Hashem. Nichlolim lo rak dvarim asurim chasom. We're not including averus, God forbid. Well, gam yom hetzer, even neutral things. Shebem shorech b'avodas Hashem. They don't seem to have any necessity for the service of Hashem. V'chein dvarim b'telim, and also things that are just a waste of time. Why is that a desert? So he says, l'fi shalav urcha d'malchut ishtoy b'mili hedjod. Which the bracket says, translates into Hebrew. Not the way of the king to be engaged in mundane activities. So what's that have to do with spirituality? Vinyano Baruchnius is, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu Yochel Yisgalos Ba'odom Ha'osek B'divrei Chol. Hashem cannot reveal himself to a person who's engaged in mundane activities when they are not directed for Hashem to bring him some advantage in his Avodas Hashem. So that's a very important line. Like we ended off yesterday. What's so bad about me wasting my time? I'm not doing anything bad. The answer is, you're doing about the worst thing you can do. Because Hashem does not reveal himself to people who are not engaged in doing in doing something that's not connected at all to Hashem. When you're eating breakfast, Hashem could reveal himself to you. You can feel close to Hashem when you're eating breakfast. If I'm eating breakfast, l'shem shamayim, that already puts me on target with Hashem to reveal himself to me even during breakfast. If I'm eating breakfast just because I'm starving and I'm hungry and I don't think about Hashem, Hashem doesn't reveal himself to people who are not engaged in things that are connected to Hashem. So again, if you legitimately could say, I'm very tired, I have to take a rest because I need more koach to serve Hashem, fine, then Hashem can be revealed to you even then. But if you're just doing it just to get away from all the stress of life and has nothing to do with Hashem, Hashem's not going to reveal himself to you. So this is the worst thing of doing neutral things without a connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that itself is a desert experience. And desert is desolate. It's desolate. And that's what you're desolate from a Kodesh Baruch Hu in your life. And to live a moment in your life being desolate from Hashem is very bad. It's as bad as living in a desert. Living in a desert is not a healthy place to be living. So that's the explanation of all the terms over here. And that's how he finishes off, continuing in the explanation of the words of Baal Tanya. That's what it means, that there's a place where people don't live. What kind of people? So let's look in again, the Chassidus Mevorot, four lines from the bottom. Because it is the deeper meaning when the pasuk says a desert is a place for yashav adam sham, that a person doesn't live, isn't that obvious? But it means adam koyal hakadosh baruch hu. Adam refers to Hashem. A man is in the image of God, so the human being is used as a symbol of God. Adam ha'elyon, meaning the supernal human being, the heavenly human being, which is a code word for God. For as it says in the prophecy, Valdemus HaKisei, and on the throne of glory, that was the prophet was shown an image of Hashem in some kind of a tangible way. And that image was Kemar Adam, a person sitting on the throne. That's the image we use to depict Hashem as the king. Shekodesh Baruch Hu, he now explains, Nigul Yeches L'Anovi B'Nus Kemar Adam. The prophecy of Ezekiel, Hashem revealed himself as a man sitting on a throne. So we're saying a desert is a place where no man lives. What it means is that Hashem doesn't live in the desert. Hashem has nothing to do with the desert. Now look in footnote 27 quickly to not let us get off to get Christian ideas here. Hakavana b'mar Adam. What does it mean in this a vision of Hashem with this vision of a person? Hashem has no body. There's no physical qualities to Hashem. So it's referring, Hila Esther Sphere is referring to the 10 Spheros, the 10 powers of Hashem. And we're using pictures to depict the powers that emanate from Hashem. Not Hashem, but the powers. That which we spark ain't lo sof velav mikol alin midos iuklal. Hashem has no end, and he's not, you know, tied into these attributes. Hashem constricted himself in a way of his holy light that he only reveals 10 of those forces. Look on the next page, Yud Tes on the bottom. Shein Esther Spheros, the 10 Spheros. In other words, Hashem manifests himself in this world in the 10 Spheros. And in the prophecy, the vision was that the vision of the Keser, the crown, is the human being sitting on the throne. Which, what does that mean? It means a king. A king has a desire, has a will, and whatever he wants gets done. That's the picture that uses as analogy to the force that, of Keser that Hashem uses in the world. Not Hashem, but the force of Keser. The force of that characteristic. Shall Yodim, through these characteristics, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Borei Ma'alei Hasom, created and ruins the world. Umeaser Spheres Halol, from those 10 spheres, and that manifests 10 forces within the person. It evolves down to the human being who has those 10 forces as well, which reflects Hashem. That's what it means when Hashem said, let's make man in our image. Meaning to say, he's created in the vision of above, meaning, it's the 10 forces, like the 10 spheres. So that's what it means now. That the desert is a place where no man lives, meaning the supernal man, meaning that image of the prophecy of Yechezkel, who sees a man on a throne, which means God's deepest desire to dwell within man. That is not in a desert. Back to the bottom line on page Yud Ches, moving on to Yud Tes. Umidbar, so Yeshu Shabbatim, so it means a desert where no man lives. We're on Yutes, the first column on the right side. Hainu, Mishenu Roy Legili Shechina. The desert means someone who's not worthy for the divine presence to be revealed. It's a desert. No man lives there. God's presence doesn't live there. What kind of person can live in the desert? What kind of person does live in the desert? What? Biblically, proof. Who lives there? A para-Adam. Not an Adam. A para-Adam. Who's known as the para-Adam? Yishmael. It's called the para-Adam. The wild donkey of a man. Not a man with a descriptive, but a donkey with a cloaking of a human being. A para-Adam, where do the Arabs live? They live in the desert. A para-Adam, this is a deeper concept now. This is the mystical concept. What do you mean when Hashem said he's going to be a para-Adam? A wild man. It means a wild man who lives in the desert. Because only an animal-like person can live in the desert. No humans really ever live there. That's what Hashem was saying on the deeper level. That Yishmael is doesn't allow Hashem's presence to come in him, even though they pray to God all day long. It's not what they mean, right? It's just to satisfy their own needs. It's not for Hashem. It's not for Hashem. They pray to Hashem, not for Hashem, not the relationship with Hashem, but to get what they want. That's the only source of Muslim prayer. Muslim prayer is: I need something. I know God can give it to me, but I don't want God. I just want what He can give me. I get what He gives. But I don't want him. So that's a para-Adam. A para-Adam lives in the desert. That's an animal-like human. Not a human that acts like an animal, but an animal that acts like a human. that's cloaked like a human. They live in the desert. But a real Adam, who has a it's the image of God sitting on the throne, that has God inside the person and living and having a relationship with him, that can't live in the desert. So that's the analogy of the human being in the desert. And that's what, let's just finish this off. Meaning to say, that's the Diras Adam Elyon, that's the supernal human, meaning God, who can live with you. This is the service of human being, as we learned in Parshas Truma. Lasos Mishkan Umachon L'shivto Yisbach, to create a dwelling place for Hashem to live. Vasuli Mikdash V'shachanti V'sochem, make a Mishkan and God will dwell in them. Every human being has to be a Mishkan, an inhabitable place for the Shekhinah to dwell in. And that's what you have to become. Right? So that's meaning. So is the Jew, what kind of habitation is a Jew? Is it the Jew living now as a city, field, or a desert? Will that allow the godly presence to live within the person? This is all understood in this mashal that the Baal Tanya gave, we learned in the first chapter. We'll explain it all. The king goes out to the fields. So we'll see. Vizel, now the brackets in the italicized. Vizel, tochen, inyan, arash, yigimul, nis, harachim, chashal. This is the content of the illumination of 13 mitos in El. Shukamashal ha-melech ha-yetzel ha-sada. It's like the king who goes out into the field. So everybody can greet him. Right? So what's that teaching us? The understanding of that is, that when they're in the field, they're engaged in mundane activities. They're not worthy that the godly spark that's inside them will reveal themselves in a consistent way, as much as if the king is in the palace. Ubefrat im b'meshach hashana, and especially if during the year, nichsol hanu b'maisim diburim machshav shelo Hashem, especially if a person stumbles in actions, thoughts, and words that are not Hashem. Ubemele ain royu klal adir sarmonis, then they're not worthy for God to rest within them, and that godly, and they don't get the godly spark. And it's very hidden. Valkain, therefore, yesh tzarech v'nesinas koyach milamala lo'ere gam osam harachokim yosef. Therefore, Hashem has to give a spark, has to give a little power to arouse those who are very far. Sheyuchlu eskarv l'kodesh baruch, that they can get close to Hashem. How? V'yidei hiskal eshiv gimel midos harachim d'chodeshel. That's through the revelation of the 13 midos of rachmim in the month of El. So yidei zeh, that through that meir anitzot saloki, that's where the godly spark gets illuminated through that shabbatim in the person. The godel koicha shel iskalusul oregaim adam anim subserve midbar ruchani, and that power is so strong to reveal an awakening even for the person who's in the spiritual fields and deserts. Rochlik meoid mahakedusha liiskar v'lakadosh baruch, who's very very far from the kedusha of a kadosh baruch. Now. Still, there's a couple things that have to be cleaned up to get the mashal clear. Ulambat, kamosha b'mashal, only the mashal, the melech basada, the king is in the field. So still, even if the king's in the field, what does everybody have to do? Yesh tzarech lotzeis mim komel kapel melech. You gotta get off your seat, and you gotta go and still greet the king. It's not like he comes in the field exactly where you are. No, he's in the field, you're in other fields, or you're in the desert, and you have to go and still greet the king. You still have to move. Kachu v'dimshol, that's the realities in life. Shekadei shegil yigil midas harachim d'chadesh el yifol pulasa b'dam shashol adam, kazeh shebechines mid baruchani. In order for the 13 attributes of mercy and elo to affect anything in the person who's like a desert, shukul yiskarv lo yisprach v'yisor sa'am shem v'yisor, the Russell said he can get close to Hashem in arousal of love and fear of Hashem. So Chaim Lot says, "Al kopani mi makom madrego." So, first has to leave his spiritual place. Levakeish lechapes zamelch kabel of Omachus Yisbarach, to seek out and search for the king and greet him and to accept the yoke of the heaven of the kingdom of Hashem. Now, there's an important miluim on the bottom. It tells you to go back to the end of the booklet on footnote 28. And this is there's still a problem with the analogy. Does anybody notice a problem with the analogy? The king goes into the field. How does that help? But he's not going into the desert. He's not going into the desert.
You have to come, the people have to come.
So that's what footnote 28, it's on page Lamed, at the end of the booklet, second last page, whatever. Footnote 28 is on the left-hand side. You see that, 28? Even though the king never goes into the desert, as we said, lo yeshev adam el yon shom, a person, meaning God's spirit, never is in the desert. Since the king goes to the field, it will arouse someone who is in the desert. Lot says me mamado matzava to leave his situation from the spiritual desert, and then to go out and greet the king in the field. If the king's in the city, the guy says, I'm so far from the city, I'm never going to go to the city. But he's ready in the fields, which are not far from the desert. That's the next step closer to the desert. It's okay, the king's already this close. I'll move out of the desert and I'll come and meet him in the field. Unbelievable. Yes, but not all the way in the desert. Hashem doesn't go into your treif place. He goes to a neutral place, and now which isn't as scary. In other words, you might not feel comfortable to go to shul because that's already the city. I'm not gonna go to shul, but a neutral place. That, maybe somebody's house Friday night is a neutral place. So Hashem comes closer, not all the way into your world, but closer, that if you're prepared to move, you don't have to move that far to appreciate greeting the king. That's the idea. So Hashem can go into neutral areas. Neutral areas that have some connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? That's the soda. So it's not so distance. I think that's the perfect analogy. That's why you try to invite a secular person to your home, in a neutral capacity, as opposed to a sukkah or something, but it's an el though. But as opposed to into the shul. Into the shul, he ain't gonna go into the shul. Secular Jew's not going into the shul. You gotta get him in a neutral place that has some connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, this is the month of Elul. It's the Milchames Rishus. It's the Milchames Rishus. Rishus is the neutral area. It's the field. Right? Veshavis Oshivim. You take captives. Who are we capturing? We're capturing the Jew who's in the desert. Do you understand? You're taking that person who's used his life to go so far away. You're capturing that part of you who has been already and bringing that person out of the desert into the field of Milchames Rishus, and from the Milchames Rishus, then you bring him to the Milchames Mitzvah. Then you bring him to the area where you can move him along into Mitzvah. So Hashem comes close, but not smothering you. You gotta still say, okay, and I'm willing to move from my desert life existence into the field. Yeah. Well, Rafal was first. Oh, I'm sorry. He's been very patient, and then I didn't forget about you.
This may be off topic a bit, but if the desert is a place of such spiritual desolation, so why did Hashem take the Jews in the desert?
That was my question.
You got some questions?
I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking about that.
And also this whole thing.
My first answer is Hashem is telling the Jews what their mission statement is. The world, when they received the Torah, was a desert. The world was a desert. The entire world was a desert. And the Jews' mission is to go into that desert and to populate it.
They're supposed to go right into Eretz Yisrael.
No, but they still, even then, they had to go through the desert. They still had to go through the desert, even for a short period of time. They would still have to walk through a desert, even if it be only 3 days. But you're going through a desert, right? To show that, you know, just like the moon illuminates the darkness, the Jews are compared to the moon, we, you know, will create a Moshav of Hashem in the desert. The whole world is a desert. We've got to bring, Eretz Yisrael, for all intents and purposes, was a desert before the Jews walked in. And don't you see the beauty of Eretz Yisrael? What Eretz Yisrael really is, for all intents and purposes, one part of a desert. You know, it isn't any different than the rest of the Arab lands that are all deserts. Okay, you got this little area near the Yarden. You get a little oasis. Right, but most of Eretz Yisrael is really not a very pleasant place to live. It's not much different than any other parts of the deserts in the Arab world. But when the Jews bring Hashem into their lives, then the desert blooms. And that's the whole point. Hashem wants us to take a world that the world itself is a desert, to inhabit that world, make that desert, make it bloom. That's a real chiddush. That is, now mankind has achieved something when you take the desert and you bring it into something. It's the same thing the very first pasuk, first parak in Bereishis, where it says that the land was what? There was no vegetation because there was no man there. There's no man there to work on the field. Meaning to say, Hashem was ready for all the vegetation to come, but was waiting for Adam to pray. Once he prayed, he brought Hashem in. The desert bloomed. So that's the idea. Hashem would say, your job is, you know, get used to it. You're going in the desert. There's nothing there. You've got to make it inhabitable for Hashem. This world, the world in general, is not receptive to Hashem. It's a desert. The whole world is a desert. Your job is to make the desert bloom. So you saw what you could do for 40 years. You could make it bloom. So now going to Eretz Yisrael, even though it's a beautiful land, only if it's done properly. So Hashem, you know, let the non-Jews for a while enjoy a beautiful, great land free of charge. But then Hashem threw them out.
In the beginning, before the Jews destroy them,
Hashem let them have it good for a while. Let them have it good for a while. But then after Klal Yisrael got thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, then it became a desert. Okay, let's move on now. So this is the analogy. Clear. The analogy is very clear. There's still one aspect that has to be explained. Will be explained later. Is the idea of the king going from the city? Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyway, now we're on page Yutes. Finally, after a week and a half of understanding the concept, now he's going to tell us what to do. Finally, so that's all good theories. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. So I still have 2 weeks to Rosh Hashanah, so we can still find out what we have to do. I'm upstairs now. The best advice I can give you for the month of Elul. We just started today. It says in the Pasuk, in Veschanan, Ubikashta Misham, and you will seek Hashem from there, as Hashem Alekecha, Hashem your God. Perish. What does that mean? You will seek Hashem from there. Perish, meaning, Kineksiv, it says, Vayar Elohim Esa Or Kito. It says in the beginning of creation, Hashem saw that the light was good. So what does it mean, the light was good? So Perish Chazal, the rabbis say, it was so good, Kitov Lignos. It's good enough that it should be hidden. Meaning to say, the more precious something is, the more hidden it is. The crown jewels don't go out into the street. The crown jewels are protected. Hashem saw that this light was good. It was so good, it needs to be protected and covered up.
As opposed to normal light.
Meaning to say, Shebechinas or Shebechinas Ha'aris Pnimis Ritzani Yisbarach Yesh b'chol echot Yisrael. This light means that inner light that illuminates within the person and shows the greatest desire that Hashem wants to be closer to the Jew. That light, elashu b'bechinas hester v'helam o'vetiva. But by nature, it's hidden a lot. So v'tzarech legalos otzer shel Yerushalayim. You have to reveal treasure houses of Yerushalayim. That's what you have to do. So he's saying a few things. God in the beginning created the world, left every light. Ooh, this light is so good. What is the light? The first act of creation is God's inner desire to be close to a Jew. That's the light. That is, and that's such a precious commodity. Hashem protected it. Where did he protect it? He buried it deep inside of the neshama of every Jew. That first light of creation is that intense connection that a human being would want to have to Hashem and that Hashem wants with us. And where is that now buried? Inside the soul of every Jew. So, number one. So what has to happen? Our job is to reveal it. So now, v'yesh mi shuba b'chinas aveda etzol b'chinas golus. So there are human beings who they have within themselves an aspect of a lost object, or we can call it an aspect of exile. In other words, that light that's inside of you, either you reveal it, and it's theirs, and you have it, and that's called Hashem dwells within you in a way that you can consciously feel and absorb, or that light can be buried inside you and it's lost. And if it's lost, it means you don't have it. And if you don't have it, that means you're in exile. You're in exile. Exile means what? Not close to the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is not being revealed. That's what I said last Shabbos afternoon. That not having a Beis HaMikdash is the greatest Chilul Hashem. Why? Because you don't have a Beis HaMikdash, you don't realize that there's Hashem in this world. That's the greatest desecration. The world is a desert. But not only the world, but every human being is his own world. Every human being in his own world either has a city, field, or desert. And when that holy neshama inside of you doesn't sense, you don't sense what the neshama is capable of sensing, which is buried deep inside of you, that means you are in galus. And you have a lost object that you have to find. What's the lost object? The light that's inside of you has to be found. Valzen nemar, this is what it says. Ah! Upikash them, you will look for it. Going to that pasuk we in Haskanim. Shitavakesh v'techapesh. Look for it. Now when you look for something, v'chipus ela achraveda. The only way you look is if an object is lost. You only look for things that are lost, not things you have that you know where they are. You look for things where you know where they are. You look for things where you don't know where they are. That davar shu'avuda etzol b'chinas kol, something that's lost from you in that aspect of exile. Shu'b'chinas nitzus alokis eskol, that is that spark, that godly spark, that's inside. I know I put it here somewhere. I know when you gave it to me, I'm going to put it in a special place not to lose it. So I put it in such a good place, I can't remember where I put it. I don't know where my that spark is within me. I'm looking for it. That's what it means. You will look from there for Hashem. Shunim shech mebechinas kel, that comes from that aspect of kel that we talked about. Hashor b'chol adam l'hachiyos nafshal kis, that resides in the person to give life to his godly soul. So now the person has to look for it. Now we haven't fully explained everything, but we're preparing the earth for the Rebbe to explain what is it that we're going to have to do, which I hope by tomorrow we'll be able to at least finish up before Shabbos to get the first aspect of what we're supposed to do. How are you going to find that lost object? That is what we have to come up with over here. What?
One thing, you said, I think, like about this today, when my friend comes.